If you're trying to reduce the sugar and calories in your diet, you may be turning to artificial sweeteners or other sugar substitutes. Their popularity is on the rise as manufacturers and consumers seek lower calorie alternatives to regular white sugar without having to sacrifice sweetness. These days, you can find artificial sweeteners and other sugar substitutes in a variety of food and beverages marketed as sugar-free or diet, including soft drinks, chewing gum, jellies, baked goods, candy, fruit juice, and ice cream. But just how big a difference do they make nutritionally? Well, we are looking into the matter on today's Please Explain with Maudine Nelson, who is a registered dietitian, New York State certified dietitian nutritionist, and a certified diabetes educator. She's director of community outreach at the Columbia University Institute of Human Nutrition. Welcome to our show.
Thanks.
We also welcome calls and comments from our listeners at 212-433-9692, or you can write us on our show page at WNYC.org. Are artificial sweeteners the most common form of sugar substitute?
Well, let me define a sugar substitute. The whole idea is, as human beings, we love sweetness. It's something that's probably in part of our evolution because it took us to foods that would be usually good sources of vitamins and something that would be has effects on our brain. So when you eat sugar, you're getting in approximately 4 calories per gram or about 16 calories per teaspoonful. But, you know, over time,
but
calories never
matter. That gives us energy?
Yes, and those calories are absolutely essential to our central nervous system and just general energy. And, you know, there's so many references in languages to things being sweet, you know, sweetheart, how sweet it is. It's unrealistic to imagine that human beings ever would have or should ever be without sweetness, you know, in our world. And the rise in popularity of things that give sweetness without calories is rather a modern thing because it has involved the ability to go in a lab and get some alchemy together and come up with interesting stuff.
And that's to some degree because sugar can make us fat. If you have diabetes, it's a real problem. It causes tooth decay.
You know what? I don't want to put sugar on the bad list. As what it is a pleasant-tasting ingredient that's naturally found in lots of fruits and vegetables and milk. And teeny-weeny bits in other foods, but it's the addition of sugar to foods which are also rich in fat that really encourages us to eat tons of it.
Well, sugar, as you say, is in a lot of foods, but we're talking about white refined sugar, mm-hmm. which also can be okay and has its positive aspects.
Right. You can't – I wouldn't point to anybody sitting on their doctor's waiting room bench because they ate too much string beans and okra. But there might be someone who is there because of a diet that really went way over the edge on pastries and on not enough physical activity. So the sugar is a part of the bigger picture.
But when we say sugar-free, for example, when I buy a jam that says no sugar, but it's sweetened by a fruit juice, aren't I just eating sugar?
You're still eating sugar that was naturally in the grape or the strawberry or the berry, whatever it was. And in the way that you can concentrate the fruit, and making jam, by the way, is really not a hard task, and it's kind of fun. It's good and messy. It's a nice way to get your jam to your jar. But what you're still getting sugar, and the difference between that and one in which sugar was added was that it might be lower in sugar, the taste might not be as intense, but it's still going to be carbohydrate.
But so there are two different sugar substitutes. There are those kinds of things that really are sugars of a different sort, and some people think some of them are healthier, like honey.
Oh, I'm following your line of thinking now. So there's white granulated sugar, which sort of gets not the health halo. And then there are rice syrup and barley syrup and honey, which gets a health halo because it doesn't seem to have gone through several stages of refining and bleaching and crystallizing. But in the end, once you swallow it, yep.
It's still sucrose.
It's still carbohydrate, a combination of a little sucrose, a little fructose, lots of total carbohydrate.
And then the others are just a product of chemistry, the artificial sweeteners.
They are brilliantly, mostly accidentally discovered combinations of things, which are sometimes based on two amino acids, such as aspartame and neotame. Sucralose, which is based on actual sugar molecules, but you flip around the things that stick off of the molecules and add something else, and you can intensify the sweetness.
Is that no longer a carbohydrate?
Correct. No longer a carbohydrate.
Probably the one that we remember first is saccharin.
Yes, saccharin is, I think, 1870, 1880-something. So it's really been in the food supply well over 100 years.
And do they have any chemical similarities, all these different substitutes?
Isn't that amazing? No. What goes on is that they stimulate the sweet receptors in the mouth. And so everyone knows you have taste buds. We often think you have taste buds on your tongue and that they're all at the front for sweetness. But the truth is the taste buds that can be stimulated by something that tells the brain sweetness is in the mouth exist all over the mouth, and that stimulation can take place with lots of different configurations. So a sugar molecule, sucrose, clearly is like the gold standard. But you can get sweetness from, as I said, aspartame, which is really two amino acids plopped together. And you take a sucrose molecule and cleverly in the lab manipulate it in such a way that you can intensify its sweetness 600 times. Isn't that amazing?
And many of these artificial sweeteners are a lot more intense than sugar. My guest is Maudine Nelson, who is a dietitian, and we're talking about the various substitutes for sugars here on Please Explain. Our number here is 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lope. There have been concerns over the years about some of these artificial sweeteners. Saccharin, for a while, was linked to cancer, although today we're assured that only happens if you give large quantities of it to rats in a laboratory. But what about others like cyclamate, which are approved in other countries but not the United States?
I'm not sure why that was a decision made by the various committees and peer professionals and experts that look at things. And similarly, while there's a fair amount of negative information about several of the sugar substitutes, I don't want to be euphemistic. They are substances which give sweetness, and so they're a substitute for sugar. If artificial sweetener is a fine term for me, sugar substitute, low calorie.
They call them sugar alcohols as well, although they're not alcohols.
Actually, it's an alcohol by its molecular configuration. Once again, it's not an alcohol like if you have a tall glass of sorbitol. Please don't drink it. It will not end well for you. First of all, you won't get the buzz. And number two, you'll be very unhappy from your belly button down.
So we have these two main categories of artificial sweeteners, sugar alcohols and non-nutritive sweeteners. And then there are some that actually merge the two?
Well, yes. Here's what happens. Well, nutritive is a complex word for saying contains calories. And if you and I wanted to put a product out in which we wanted to have a no-calorie but sweet item, whether it's gum or syrup or ice cream or a beverage, each of those artificial sweeteners, each of those chemicals which stimulates the sweet receptors, will do a few different things. They start off sweet, and then the sweetness might linger. They start off sweet, and then there might be a bitterness. They start off sweet, and then they might keep the mouth feeling a little dry.
Some of them have an aftertaste.
Yes, and all of them do that, and when compared to, once again, the gold standard, sucrose. Mm. So the companies will formulate them with a little bit of several of the different sweeteners in order to smooth out and make it more similar to what real granulated sugar tastes like in your mouth.
Don't some manufacturers call their sweeteners natural, even though they're processed or refined, as in the case of the stevia preparations?
That is a tricky way to say natural. It's derived from a leaf, and there are several different components in that leaf which offer sweetness, and so you really are still manipulating the leaf to come up with the powdered product that consumers are using. So, but I think in the big picture, someone who wants to put stevia across their whole grain cereal is way ahead of the game than the one who wants to eat the donut. So go ahead. It's fine. You're on the right track.
Many people feel that as long as they're drinking sugarless drinks, there are no limits. How healthy is it to drink 6 Diet Cokes in a typical, on a day?
Well, Leonard, you're talking to a nutrition educator. So my question would be, why are you having 6 anything? 6 cups of coffee, 6 regular Cokes.
I mean, like 6 glasses of seltzer in a day.
Oh, that. Okay, now we're the new ball game. That's actually probably not only benign, but maybe even beneficial. So would there be a toxic level of the substances that make the soda sweet? And all of the substances have been tested and have been found safe at limits that are exceeding what someone would drink in 6 glasses of soda. But I would still want to say, as a nutrition educator, that's a little bit skewed. That's a lot of soda for one person on an average day. And can't you find something else, like water or seltzer?
It's also, studies have suggested, although I gather nobody knows exactly why, that if you drink a lot of diet soda, for example, you actually will put on weight.
I'm familiar with the published studies on that. So we're looking at people who might have the argument that is presented as, if it stimulates your body to produce insulin, then insulin has a down the way effect of saying, you're still hungry. You had artificial sweetener, but you still want food. That effect is not so overwhelming that you'll knock down a bottle of soda and then get ravenous and go, you know, eat a whole chicken. May I just go back to that same item? It's the big picture. Mm. It's what else was in the meal? Did you have protein? Was it a very high carbohydrate meal where you use this artificial sweetener? And things are, you know, we really can say, what's the best plate and what's the best beverage? Lots of plant foods, a little bit of animal foods, and a non-sugar beverage.
So it's a food also. Context is really important when we eat food. If I eat sugar, if I have a lot of sugar, a lot of candy without other things, my body's going to react quite differently than if I have sugar in a meal where there are vegetables and all sorts of other things.
I could say that's going to happen. You're very accurate in saying that. But by the way, if a person has diabetes, the sugar's not prohibited. The person with diabetes is really looking at their total carbohydrate. So it's a combination of sugar plus starch. And then it's a matter of, is the amount of carbohydrate I'm eating, which could be sugar from peaches, sugar from putting tea bag sugar in my tea, is all that carbohydrate fine so that in 2 hours my blood sugar is back to the target range? But if a person says I can eat 60 grams of carbohydrate, I'm not encouraging it to be cotton candy, but I am encouraging it to be some peaches and some broccoli and maybe a sweet potato along with some protein.
Do sweet potatoes have sugars in them to make them sweet?
They have carbohydrate in the form of starch and as well as sucrose.
Yeah. And we see that with other vegetables. If you roast beets, for example, they become very sweet. Onions.
Yes. So that's a good way to see that there is a significant amount of carbohydrate in a variety of the foods that come from plants. So that's your vegetables, your mushrooms, and things like that. They're not high in carbohydrate, but it is there. And when you do caramelize them, you can definitely perceive the sweetness, and that's what makes them more appealing.
My guest is Maudine Nelson, who's Director of Community Outreach at the Columbia University Institute of Human Nutrition. We're talking about sugar substitutes on today's Please Explain, and we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Some people also go to Facebook and leave us a message there. We'll be back with those listeners after we take a little break. Stay with us. We are back with Maudine Nelson of the Columbia University Medical Center, and we are talking about sugar substitutes on today's Please Explain. And we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can leave a question on our show page at WNYC.org. Let's go to Anne from the East Village. Hi, Anne.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. There's something I've been interested in quite some time, is the sugar in the raw, the little sugar packets you get, like maybe at a Starbucks. is that significantly better than processed white sugar? I've tried sativa. I don't want the chemicals. I think they're all horrible. Honey is okay.
So my answer would be the sugar in the raw, once you swallow it, is going to be the same as sucrose that you get from the regular granulated white sugar. With
really?
I don't want to say that you've been sort of duped. It's still, if you like the taste, I think you should continue to use it.
But and we've heard again and again that processed sugar is bad for us.
It's supposed to be better. Is it not?
Well, the idea is that you start, I'm going to make this answer short but long. You start with sugar cane or sugar beets. You crush them, you boil them, you centrifuge them, you get crystals. Now, I can take the crystals and go through another process to sort of clean them up and make them white. I might even add something to keep them from caking. So sugar in the raw simply stopped, you might say, a little bit short of the final white granulated crystal. And it may have over, comparing 5 pounds of that to 5 pounds of white sugar, a teeny bit more B vitamins, a teeny bit more iron. I would encourage you to have a nice bowl of black beans or some black-eyed peas or lima beans and get your B vitamins and iron with a lot more flair. But so if a person isn't worried about sugar having an adverse effect on them, pick the one that you enjoy the most.
A listener wrote in, I have to say that I haven't found a sweetener that doesn't have a dreadfully horrible aftertaste. Are there any sweeteners out there that don't have an aftertaste?
That's exactly how all of us respond to them. Everyone gets a slightly different effect that this one tastes too sweet too long or this one is bitter. So sometimes you'll just find one you like or you sort of bail on all of them. Now, adding cinnamon to things is said to enhance the sweetness of foods, and that I've tried it and I like it. I'll put cinnamon or ginger in coffee and I have no interest in adding sugar to it. And that's not from saying, oh, I don't want sugar in my coffee. I just kind of like that sort of savoriness of it.
But when you drink a soda, a diet soda, you know right away that it is, if you weren't told, there is that odd aftertaste. It's not the same as sugar. But I've also noticed a big difference when you drink some kind of a soft drink that's made in Mexico, where they use real sugar as opposed to the stuff that they're making in the United States with corn syrup.
Yeah, you get sort of the cottage industry sodas that really taste quite different, the ginger ales, the colas, the root beers, than the national chain commercial sodas that ship all over the place. I mean, they have various packaging places. So I do drink diet soda, and when I have regular sweetened colas, I can tell the difference right away, and I've learned to actually prefer the taste of the artificially sweeteners in my diet soda.
Is the soda from the past, which used regular sugar, is that any different to us nutritionally than the ones that use the corn sweeteners?
I would say yes. Now, we are opening a little bit of a can of worms, because it's then the issue of, as high fructose corn syrup, as devious on our bodies as some of the more hysterical communities make it out to be. And I'm leaning towards the it's not body friendly high fructose corn syrup. So my first issue would be knock off after your second glass of soda a day. Don't have to have the third and more. But when you do, keep in mind that the total sugar is a part of your total day.
Mary Pat asks on Facebook whether diet soda really makes you hungry.
The evidence is from, I think, two sort of small studies, which were not, they were peer-reviewed. And the question of hunger is so complex it starts with a signal to the brain that says, when you begin to eat, you get what we call a satiety signal, and it happens in different parts of the brain, and it comes from different hormones that originate in different parts of the gastrointestinal system. So if you drink the soda all by itself, you probably will be hungry. But if you're having the diet soda, I'm saying, with an artificial sweetener, and was that because you faked your brain into thinking there was carbohydrate and then your insulin production started to rise and then you get this hunger signal because insulin can do that? Or was it because you didn't have any food with it? So it's back to the big picture. My message to all of the people who I have the pleasure of offering nutrition information to is that when you eat your special, put a placemat in front of you, have a nice plate, colorful things, low-fat carbohydrate, low-fat proteins, and then a simple non-sugar beverage.
Is there a problem if you want to use the non-sugar in baking or cooking? Because unlike sugar, artificial sweeteners provide no bulk or volume?
It's very tricky to try to come up with a comparable cookie or cake or pie to the ones that we've learned traditionally to make with granulated sugar. Because they have no bulk, there might be a change. That means that some sugars, for example, will hold liquid. They're called humectifiers, or I think that's the word. When you use an artificial sweetener, you don't get that. So your product might be more crumbly and dry. And there are recipes to let you learn how to increase the flour, maybe increase vegetable or canola oil, maybe decrease eggs, a few different things you can do to come up with a texture which is similar. But it's not the real thing. And sometimes you'd say, it's okay to have the real thing.
Well, over the years, we've heard about companies coming up with sugar substitutes that have bulk so that you can use them in baking. But there always seems to be a problem. They break down because heat breaks them down. All sorts of other problems occur.
So that now we're talking back to the chemical composition of the sugar substitutes. And so you have something like sucralose, which does not break down in heat, but it doesn't have bulk. And while you can buy it in the supermarket under the brand names, where they call it spoon for spoon, a matching cupful is a matching cupful, when you lift it, you'll realize it's very light because basically it's bulked up with something that traps air, so it's maltodextrin. So it looks like sugar, but it's far less dense.
Splenda is the sucralose.
Splenda as the brand name. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's got some other brand names in other parts of the world. We always will see sucralose as an ingredient on the label. So once again, you try it. I've made, let's say, a fruit pie with my crust having no sweetener in it anyway, but the sweetening agent that goes in with the fruit can be a non-bulking sweetener such as sucralose or Splenda, and you get a fairly closely resembled pie. And sometimes if you're trying to modify your total carbohydrate, you know, kind of keep it in check, that gives you options to have more things. That's really the bottom line with all the artificial sweeteners. They're options. If they bother you in some way, and I do agree that some people are not satisfied with the taste profile on those sweeteners, and it's hard for them to find something that's going to do the trick. But it's an option if you don't want it. Pass.
And none of them cause health problems of the sort that we might see from sugar?
Sugar health problems are related to the company sugar keeps. So I wouldn't point to a bag of granulated, a 5-pound bag of sugar and, you know, like hold it, put handcuffs on it and say, you got to be put away because you're dangerous. But if I can walk into a small supermarket and pay 50 cents for an apple, which I think is crazy overpriced, but also pay 50 cents for a sweet honey bun, which is underpriced, I know what the apple versus the honey bun is going to do to my population. People eating the honey buns are going to experience weight gain. They may experience abdominal fat. They may get fatty liver. They're at risk for diabetes. If they have a genetic predisposition, it's not going to end well. Whereas the apple, how bad can it get?
Well, along those lines, Diane from Manhattan writes in, she eats a lot of fruit. Can that give you too much sugar, even though it's natural?
If you're eating a lot of fruit, the amount of carbohydrate, if you don't mind, I'm going to switch out of the sugar realm and say total carbohydrate in the fruit, is still a part of the whole carbohydrate for the day. If you have no health complications such as impaired insulin response that happens in diabetes, I don't see why that would be anything dangerous. And, you know, you have a sense of well-being that you feel like you needed more to that food or that snack. If so, put a little peanut butter with it. Add something else to round it out.
Brett on Facebook asks, are there links between artificial sweeteners and cancer?
No.
Now, in the past, we heard saccharin, but then it was pointed out that they gave a lot of saccharin to lab rats, and nobody would ever eat that much proportionately, human.
They gave them on a daily basis from the day they were born, which means mama rat was drinking it, and it came out in her baby rat's breast milk. And also the male rats have a slightly different acidity level of their urine, which caused the high concentration of saccharin to crystallize. And the crystallization caused the bladder lining to get calloused, and cells were turning over more rapidly, and that led to the presentation of tumors. But that does not happen in us.
Now, a lot of people are calling in or writing in asking whether one is better than the other. I'm getting the sense from you that it all depends on what you're using the sweetener for.
Thank you for answering that better than I could. It's, first of all, what is your own mouth response to it? I have sat on observing people on taste panels and with other nutritionists and consumers, and some people say Splenda is fine, I can't tell the difference, and others say, oh, wow, when I had Splenda, it's like it tastes sweet in my mouth for 3-4 more minutes. But so you find the taste profile you like. And
if it's stevia, then that's fine.
That's fine. And the FDA...
Xylitol.
Well, xylitol and all the sugar alcohols are naturally occurring sweeteners. They are in fruits naturally. They're in other vegetables. And they're not available to us as consumers to go home and cook with them. But we'll find them in gums, and we'll find them in a lot of candies and products like that. The only caution, and I don't want to get too specific, like which of the sugar alcohols to be aware of, but some of them will give you diarrhea or a very loose stool if you have them in large amounts.
Do we know why?
Yes, because they introduce more, they draw fluid into the intestines, and the more fluid into the intestines, the more heavy and watery a stool, and then you have the peristaltic response to move it on out the back door.
Now, Kate in Washington Heights asked about molasses as a sweetener. Is that just sugar?
Molasses is a byproduct of the sugar cane production, and it does have more the iron and B vitamins. But when I say more, I'm thinking in a less than a percent more. And as a sweetening agent, it also introduces a combination of other flavors that may interfere with how you enjoy the food that you put it on.
And people are asking about blackstrap molasses. Is that different than other molasses?
That's some hardcore stuff. It's, you know, if you're real old school, that was what we used to belt down to get to sort of treat iron poor blood. And if you like it, there's no reason, but consider it still part of your total carbohydrate.
Sam from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I was overseas in Israel, and there they require the caloric content to be listed on the outside of the box. Turns out that 3.5 ounces or 100 grams of Sweet'n'Low has 388 calories. I called it Sweet'n'Low up in the United States. They said they're not required to write, they can write zero calories as long as each serving has less than 4 or 5 calories.
Well, that is true, because what's going on, I'm not sure, because I would really like to see the package that you read.
I have it at home. I actually brought it back from Israel.
That would be so cool.
Dextrose is sugar.
Okay,
I asked them, why do you have to add dextrose? They said that it wouldn't have enough body. So I said, why not just compress it into small little pills the way they used to have old-fashioned sodium saccharin? Didn't really have a good answer.
Well, it is a bulking agent so that the consumer can have the impression that there's something there. I would like to just say I don't think you're being misled by the label. The amount that they are using, if you said it's ounces, correct?
I'm sorry.
And then
Israel, ounces.
So ounces. So what happens is...
It's the metric system, so it's 100 grams, which has 388 calories. 100 grams in the English system is about 3.5 ounces.
Correct, 3.5 ounces.
3.5 ounces is about 100 packs. So it means that each pack has about 4 calories.
That's true. And that's not misrepresenting them as being a sugar substitute. It's the aggregate amount that looks pretty outrageous, but per person, per packet, it's the bulking agent that we're looking at.
We have no time, but people keep on asking about agave. Is that any different from any of the other...
The agave has a high fructose content, which makes it a a low glycemic index, and that's for some people, they would prefer that, but it's still carbohydrate.
Maudine Nelson is a registered dietitian, New York State certified dietitian nutritionist. She's at the Columbia University Medical Center, and I want to thank you so much for being with us today on today's Please Explain.
My pleasure.
Amazon started as an internet bookseller. On Monday's show, we'll take a look at how the company has grown to become a changer of global commerce. And then director Lauren Greenfield talks about her new documentary, The Queen of Versailles. Also, Brian Kastner tells us what it was like to command an explosive ordnance disposal unit in Iraq. Plus, the medical director of Bellevue Hospital on his memoir and what the stories of 12 patients from a UN diplomat to a Supermax Rikers inmate can tell us about larger societal issues. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan's the executive producer, and we have help today from Alex Geller, Katja Johns, and contributing producer Bonnie LaFave. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.